Hello, everyone. Welcome to News from a Boring Dystopia. This week, the U.S. Election Special.
Hi, everyone. So I'd like to make some discussions about some really important matters on U.S. election, and they probably influence largely on the election either of Trump or Biden.
I accept this nomination for President of the United States of America.
So I'd like to make a point here about the demographic matters on the elections. I mean, especially in two states, Florida and Texas. Florida especially will be discussed first because it's a swing state and there's a lot of delegates there. So, I mean, Trump and Biden are trying to catch any piece of delegates they can from these states, especially in the last few days to the happening of the election. But the problem is that Trump has one only advantage in Florida regards to Biden. That is, the great part of the states is purely Republican and vote for Trump. And the Florida is known by re-elect presidents. But the other parts, it's that everything is better for Biden. We can look to the majority of, not the majority, because the majority is white, but the great part of the population in Florida is Latinos and the great part of blacks, which has more appeal to the Biden administration. And especially in this time of coronavirus, which this population is the most hit because they're the most vulnerable ones. So this mitigate the popularity of the Trump, which can make Biden win some points in this state. But it's not only that, but we just have to highlight here that not all Latinos vote for Biden.
Miami-Dade, as you can see, we already have 84% in. This is a terrible margin for him, 54%. Not
explain
good.
That. It's the Latino vote in
this
South
is,
Florida.
And
explain.
It's a different type of Latino vote. It's the Cuban-American vote. It's the Venezuelan-American vote. But, I mean, you can see here.
So the Cuban Hispanics once vote for Trump, especially because they are against Cuba. And Trump has been harsh on Cuba sometimes, even speaking critics regarding to it publicly to gain the votes from this community. The other part is the coronavirus crisis, which has been destroying Florida, a state very dependent on tourism, and the Disney Orlando Parks, which has seen its visitors, I mean, going down in numbers, especially due to the coronavirus crisis. And especially regarding to Texas, which is a traditionally Republican state from the Jimmy Carter's elections, which was the first time in a long time there has been Democratic state, is not sure if Trump will win this state in the election of 2020 because of two main causes. The first one is the demographic change in Texas. Texas was the country that received the most number of people from other states, especially California, which is well known for being democratic one. And I mean, a lot of Latino people and black people are making part of this conservative state, changing the profile of the voters there. And the other one is the coronavirus crisis, which I mean, Texas is not an exception among the other United States places, which has been hit a lot, and the coronavirus probably would be the biggest cause of the Trump loss in the Tuesday.
You know, from my own experiences, you know, being Latino in the United States, my family members are they. You know, this is kind of politically incorrect, but we say that a lot of the times Latinos from Texas are Latinos that know their place to some degree. They are kind of like, I view it as kind of like indoctrinated people to some degree in like conservatism and being kind of like, it's obviously not everyone, but there's a huge segment of this kind of like culture of like self-hate and conservatism, I think, that go hand in hand. And I do think that not only that, but there's just really, really lacking in investment in the public school system. And there also is a lot of, there's a lot of gerrymandering, which is as well as a voter suppression type tactics, like, mail-in voting. Lila, for example, who was a previous host who was living in Texas, she was even commenting how she can't vote by mail. Do you remember that, Bruno?
Yeah.
Yeah. So exactly. So I do think that people always say that Latinos in Texas are going to be galvanized and vote for the Democrats, which are, I think, in general, in their best interest. But I do think that there is an overwhelming culture in Texas of kind of like nationalism, religion, and basically kind of like opiates of the masses in a way that kind of prevent people from voting rationally. That is kind of sad, but I do think that is very strong, and that is in against the interests of the Latino communities voting for the Democratic Party. But and to tie it in also with Florida, I do think that there are a lot of Latinos in Florida. But the other thing that's confounding is these are Latinos that are Cubans, and Cubans are also the kind of distinct Latinos in the sense that they do vote Republican, especially the older generation. That being said, the younger generation is more Americanized and is, you know, further away from communism. And so they are, you know, not reacting against that. A lot of the Cubans that did flee from Cuba during the Cuban Revolution also are the descendants of the basically colonial type of, the plantation owners. So it is kind of like a distinct type of Latino that's coming over, that came over during the the Cuban migration during the, during Castro's revolution. So it's, and I would say also a lot of Cuban Americans see themselves as more white. They physically are a lot of the times more white, especially the older immigrants. The newer immigrants are, of course, more like more African features, more African descent. But I do think that those are confounding factors with both of those areas that kind of are make things a little bit more of a toss-up than it might appear, even though they are both heavily Latino states.
The other topic that I really want to discuss about it regarding to demographic changes is the suburbs. I mean, Trump has been very sure that he will win the suburbs, especially because of the WASP society, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant society that live in the suburbs, and Trump rely a lot in these voters. But I mean, the suburbs are not more like in the 60s and 70s, or I don't know, guys, if you already read the book or watched the movie The Stepford Wives by Ira Levin. He's really depicts this suburbs of really white people. There's housewife women who is like a cult of the masculinity, which is like a woman who is submitted to the husband, always taking chores of the house, never leaving home to work, only like delivering pies to the neighbors and stuff. This suburbs is, I mean, doesn't exist anymore. I mean, today we have a great diversity of people living in the suburbs, especially Latinos and Asians, but we have a lot of black people moving to the suburbs. We change the profile of these of these voters, and especially women, and because women today work, they are more active in their community, and they have roles that they didn't used to do in the 60s, 70s, and even the 80s. So I mean, women are more worried about economy, worried about their jobs, worried about the president handles regarding to the pandemics. So I mean, Trump should be not sure about the voters from the suburbs. So it only shows that Trump doesn't know the suburbs anymore. I mean, he only has this old-fashioned way of view, this population and the women there.
I think you're completely right, Bruno, with the suburbs. It is the suburbs in California, are very similar to the future of a lot of the suburbs in the rest of the United States, which is going to be integrated, largely, wealthy, but not necessarily segregated anymore. I know that, for example, from my grandparents, coming to California, there were certain neighborhoods in suburban neighborhoods that they couldn't actually purchase from. They were redlined. So that's a historical kind of pattern with the suburbs. There's a lot of redlining. There's a lot of basically de facto segregation, as even with regards to price. But a lot of these things are changing, and people, especially my age, are not necessarily as inclined to move to the suburbs. George is saying that I'm voting Republican. So George, there's a big conspiracy that I am this closet Trump supporter that George is and George and Bruno kind of believe in, and I am not going to be really in the discussion. But that being said, separate from that conspiracy theory, I do think that the suburbs are becoming more integrated, and they are becoming more purple, at least. You can say a lot of suburbs are still more red, but they are becoming integrated, and a lot of suburbs throughout the United States are definitely becoming purple. So it's definitely more contentious than it appears.
No, yeah, as you said, that your parents couldn't buy some houses in some places. I mean, there is like a racial matter or a racial fact. I don't know, it's a variable. I don't know the specific name of this, but so like a neighborhood with more people of color, they are less valuable than places only made for white people. So I mean, it's a reality that it's changed, as you said. I mean, because today it doesn't make any sense. Thanks God for that. Okay. Regarding to the, we can jump to the foreign policy, which is my specialty right now. It's not being a well-debated subject in this campaign, especially because the internal domestic matters are like popping up, from racial tensions to, I don't know, to gender and LGBTQI plus matters. So, but I mean, we don't have to lose this from our side, because I mean, these have a lot of implications to the American power, to the world, especially in the way Trump is leading the country. Shuri says something interesting. Do you remember this?
I think we were talking about the merging of, religion and state, and what becomes state interest then, and who gets, included and who gets excluded in this process.
Yeah, that's almost a securitization process, yeah.
And for the record, Shreya cannot vote. So it's unfortunate, it's a travesty, but Shreya cannot vote. She's totally so qualified to vote, but she cannot.
What I would say is the most important thing for me is how is a new America, or the potential new America, how would it look under Biden? as we have seen, and as you've pointed out yourself, America has gone extremely isolationist during the Trump administration. So, and as you mentioned yourself, Bruno, they've withdrawn from multiple international organizations, and it's interesting to see and to think about how that would change later down the line, if it does change at all. We know that America in the past likes to take a stance of, we are the number one in the world, we are going to dictate international relations, and we're going to say how things are going to run from now on. But they have done everything but play that role over the past 4 years. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how that plays out if Biden was to win the election. And if not, what is in store for America with Trump as a leader for a second term, or whether he would change his foreign policy?
Trump has been isolationist from the beginning, putting America first. He withdrew from some kind of international organizations as World Health Organization. He wanted to withdraw from NATO, UN Human Rights Council, and so much others. So, I mean, America is withdrawing from its own architecture that it created after the World War II.
Withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord.
Yeah, I completely agree, Bruno, with that assessment. I think that America, regardless of the president, wants to become more isolationist. And I do think that Biden is largely sailing the waves of public sentiment to some degree. He is, you know, representing the will of the voter. But unfortunately, with a lot of the way that the United States is structured with its voting process, it is heavily in favor of the wealthy. It is, you know, a lot of the poor, especially immigrant communities, especially like the Hispanic community, Latino community, they can't speak English. They don't, maybe they're disenfranchised from the vote. So you do get this kind of like rightward skew with regards to the policy. But regardless of, you know, complaints by the far left, Biden is the most progressive candidate in American history. In recent American history, in my lifetime, he's the furthest left candidate. So even from a left wing perspective, a very far left perspective, he is the best option. So I would say that that is definitely there's definitely a segment of people on the far left that don't like Biden and are not going to vote for him. But I'm not of that mindset. I am of the perspective that he is the furthest left option if you are in that camp. And then, of course, I think that a lot of Trump's base, being older voters, feel largely betrayed by Trump's handling of the coronavirus, where they're very vulnerable, and Trump has had a lot of policies where he doesn't necessarily agree in its validity, its full validity. So I would say that those are definitely factors against him, for sure.
From a Brazilian perspective, I'm feel kind of worried about my country, especially because of our president, Bolsonaro, which self-titled as the Trump of the tropics, as something if it was good in any type of measure. But I mean, because the President Bolsonaro has been a lot of close to the Trump administration, especially because identifies as a defender of the liberalism and democracy in South America. And I mean, his relations to the Washington right now are more like personalistic than bureaucratics, which kind of hurts the Brazilian potential to make agreements and get some benefits from this relation with United States, since Trump can't see any type of difficulty to get things from Brazil. And Bolsonaro, I mean, trying to be easy with Trump and even docile, I'll say, think he is like being even more closer to the United States and being even more like a special ally, which doesn't happen because, I mean, Trump doesn't see Brazil today as irreplaceable ally as the United Kingdom, even India and Japan. So, I mean, I don't think the Biden presidency, if he wins, will be harsh in Brazil. I think Biden won't try to create any type of tensions, especially in the current American situation. But, I mean, the Brazil will be even more isolated, diplomatically speaking, in the international system if the Biden administration wins, which, as a Brazilian, as I expect so, because, I mean, it forces Brazil to find new partnerships and get along with the new reality, showing that, I mean, you can base state diplomacy on persons and personalities, but, I mean, but only and exclusively in the interest of a country. So, I mean, I think the both features, it's dark from a Brazilian perspective. I can't see any type of gray enhancement of the Brazilian agency in the international world, even with Trump or with the Biden administration.
What would be interesting to see as well is, and I think you've mentioned it before, a Biden administration would be more of a damage control administration in terms of foreign policy, because it would be the Biden administration trying to reestablish relations that have been severed by the Trump administration, trying to reestablish, and I quote Antonio, it was, trying to reestablish the American face in the international arena. In comparison to another Trump administration, which could either be attempting to do that or could be a further deterioration of American face in international relations, or even worse, what do you guys think about the current political climate, not only COVID-19, but also the Black Lives Matter movement and the George Floyd murder? I assume and I believe that it's definitely going to play a role in the upcoming elections, particularly the administration's response to the past year. Basically, the year of 2020 is going to be the year that is going to determine whether Trump stays in office or not, whether there is enough people that think he's actually managed it correctly, let's go and vote for him again, or people that would have said, no, he did not administer it whatsoever in the correct manner. Do you believe that America is ever going to have a coup? And I quote Antonio from a while ago when he said, the only reason why America doesn't have a coup is because there's no American embassy to organize it. Well, do you see a coup d'etat against Donald Trump?
I would say no. I would say that I do not see a coup coming from the Trump campaign, because I do think that even the very partisan conservatives do have some remnants of democratic norms that they follow. But I do think that if we continue, I feel like if the further we escalate towards, abandoning democratic norms and abandoning in the United States, the further we escalate in that Trump direction towards basically authoritarianism to some degree, I think that increases the likelihood, election after election, with conservative judges after conservative judges, that we do move towards that direction. I think that I am a little bit optimistic about the political system currently, but I do think that it's definitely a vulnerable thing. I was just wondering, maybe I would introduce a question. You're all people from other parts of the world to some degree. What is your perception of the United States under a basically a Trump presidency, a bastion supposedly of democracy? And how would that change under a Biden presidency, or would it do that at all?
I personally, I mean, as an Indian immigrant student here, I think my views of the US won't really change a lot. I mean, this election has a lot of stakes for how we, you know, identity politics and rhetoric. But even if Biden wins, you know, like they say, settle for Biden, I don't think foreign policy is going to change a lot. I mean, Obama was a very nice leader who was, you know, hailed by liberals, but he was still bombing villages in the Middle East. So let's not forget that. And it's just, I think the stakes here are more about domestic politics, racial politics in America. And it does have consequences abroad as well. Like, I mean, in India, our prime minister, who Narendra Modi, he supports Donald Trump. So, and they have this, you know, certain perspective against religious minorities, namely Muslims, which is on, that's the page they sort of relate on. And if he doesn't win, that sort of international, you know, sanctioning of targeting Muslims would also change. So I think that's definitely important. But in terms of foreign policy, I don't think if Biden wins, suddenly I will see US as not, you know, imperialistic like I see it now, or, you know, not trying to intervene in conflicts and making it worse, which it has done over the past few years, not few, many years.
Yeah, I think it's a more structural thing than more, as I said, personalistic issue, because, I mean, the United States has been even Democratic or even Republican as interventionist and, as I said, minority oppressor. We can say in the Republican government of Bush being invading Iraq and Afghanistan, we have the Clinton administration oppressing the black community, calling them sexual predators and stuff. So, I mean, Barack Obama bombing Libya. So, I mean, it's not, we can't put, I mean, they're all part of establishment. They're all part of the establishment. So, Biden has been in politics since the 60s. So, I mean, he's not a renew. He's probably a person who will bring things back to normal. Even the normal being bad or good, I mean, depends on people that say this. But I mean, America in the Trump administration has been actually acting weirdly when we compare historically to the behavior of America in the international system. And then, I mean, the way of doing democracy. So, I mean, Biden, as Sharia said, will not be the redeemer of the world, will be only a repetition and probably things back into normal.
As you say, it's very interesting because we've seen America play this role of, it plays this very interventionist role. What's most interesting to me is whether America would return to that status, particularly now, as in, for example, let's grab a situation where the international community would genuinely get involved. Let's grab the Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. Do you reckon America would intervene? Would you reckon America would intervene in Venezuela? The American presidency has been in the past half century has been characterized by constant intervention and constant interaction in the rest of the world. Most notably the invasion of Iraq in 2003 and the foreign policy of the US since 9/11. You know, the idea that America has the right, or has the God-given power to democracy, which is the most one of undemocratic can do. And I've got a very strong opinion on the American democratic system at the moment. And in response to Antonio's question, he asked, what does Trump in the US democratic system mean? And I would say that it is the Trump reaching power through democracy is the institution of organized bigotry and stupidity. You know, the king of bigots becomes the president. And as I said, American people are not the most popular in the UK, particularly in the UK. We look at them and we say, you must be really dumb, you know. And then after the 2016 election, we said, yeah, you really are. But then we had our own election, you know, we had Boris Johnson come to power, and look at how that's turned out for us. You know, with me and Brexit, I'm not going to go and talk about Brexit because it's too much to go into, but I would have never voted Leave in terms of Brexit. And now it's very interesting because the 2016 elections and the 2017 elections in the UK and the subsequent elections that have happened in the UK and the US have been an interesting mirror to what has happened in the global South for the past half a century, you know? Because you have been given, when I say you, I mean America and here in the UK, we have been given the choice of the lesser evil, which is just a reoccurring theme elsewhere in the world. You know, in Peru, the past six elections have been which one is going to be the lesser evil. Look at, and then you've got the scenario where you've got strong political ideas rising through in the developing countries and the global South. And when it does in America, or when it does in the UK, it has a mass effect, particularly because of the role that these countries play in the international arena. So I just, in one way or another, I wish that America remains in an isolationist role, as in focusing on their domestic policies and sorting out their own country and their own needs. But at the same time, I think that structurally, as Bruno would have pointed out, America plays a higher role than we actually realize or get to realize. I don't think that they should be interventionist whatsoever. I don't think that a Biden administration should look particularly into doing humanitarian interventions and military humanitarian interventions per se. But more importantly, I think that America needs to return to its roles, particularly in the particularly in terms of the environment. You know, when the US withdrew from the Paris Agreement, we saw a massive change, particularly in terms of their domestic CO2 production. And I think that at the moment, the biggest crisis that we need to face is the climate, besides COVID-19, is the climate crisis and the environment and that sort of line. Not that I'm advocating for the Green Party, but I think that as an international community, that's the next big thing to solve after we've gone over COVID-19. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I think you're completely right. You know, I guess we can just close on this and we can move on to the election, a ballot counting. But before I close, I think that for me, with regards to the election, obviously I'm not as beck and call to the foreign policy of the United States, but my big issue was the children in cages. I think that as a policy of deterrence, I think that the fact that was even, floated and then passed, I think is, very, telling of, I think the culture of the United States, more broadly. I think that there are states like California and New York and, you know, cities, even in blue cities and, you know, throughout the United States that obviously completely reject that. But the fact that was even allowed to pass deeply taints the identity from my perspective as an American. I identify primarily as a Californian, I would say, with that in the electoral context. But yeah, that's just kind of my two cents on it.
I mean, we're talking about democracy, so I think it's very important to note that this is happening right now.
Is proving to be a key piece of the 2020 election in these final days. Just this week, the court has handed down rulings on absentee ballot.
Recently, the Supreme Court ruled that only the ballots that come in by election day will be counted, and anything that arrives after will not be counted in Wisconsin. And this has consequences because of COVID, a lot of people are mailing in their ballots. And with the USPS crisis, a lot of ballots will be coming in late. And we also have to think about which demographic is using these mail-in ballots more and who is actually going to be, you know, going and voting in person. And that differs. So that definitely has consequences, especially in swing states. And I don't think it's democratic at all. In their opinion, they use this, you know, they cite Bush v. Gore, which has been called one of the most corrupt cases in the history of the Supreme Court. And it has never been used. It has never been cited in any other case. It is like, its logic is so flawed. But today, Brett Kavanaugh used it in his own opinion. So I don't know what it says about America as a democratic country when a lot of people might not even have their ballots counted.
Yeah, and we see this problem with a first world country, especially the United States, with first from the global south, always regarded as the center of the liberty, freedom, democratic principles and stuff. And it's very scary because it seems like the gray standard is falling apart. And I mean, we can't see any type of, I don't know if it as discourse is falling down and everybody agree with the discourse. So we can't see an alternative or sometimes we don't see how this is so important. I mean, America, the leader of the free world being not free at all at home. So, I mean, it's a very complicated, and the countries that can, I mean, get spy with this. I mean, I'm a little afraid of, I mean, especially in South America, countries that use this situation if Trump wins and if the election, the voter counting system be frauded. I mean, would be like give some space to certain narratives in Latin America countries, which make our political system more tolerant. Because if the America, the greatest democracy in the world, allows this type of thing, why can't we do this? Why can't we fail? Why can't we be less democratic? So, I mean, it's very worrying for me, this type of situation, especially if in the perspective of a person who lives in a country which the president greets the dictatorship times. So, in the same time, is a very Trump supporter. So, I mean, it's very scary times, actually.
Thank you so much, everybody, for this week's two episodes on News from a Boring Dystopia. As always, our email is nfaboringdystopia@gmail.com. That is nfaboringdystopia@gmail.com. Our Instagram is @fromboringd. Please like our pictures. Shreya is now the Instagram manager, and she's doing a great job. And then our Twitter is @fromboring. And don't let the name confuse you. It's really, really witty stuff.